been a primary author of two of the largest tax cuts in the history of our state.
Let the eagle soar.
Son, go outside and dust yourself off. And when you feel good again, come back in and talk to me. We know what they would have done because we know what they did.
K-Row. I've been there. K-Row.
We are going to fight for Missouri values. We are going to defend life. And we are going to protect our constitutional rights.
What I am trying to do to simply make tomorrow just a little bit better than today.
We're back for another hashtag Middle Edge podcast. And this week we have two guests. Throwing back to our original days of the podcast when we had four guests. First off, though, before I introduce our lovely guests, so I'd like to thank our sponsors, Public Services and the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce, both of which are probably very happy and very angry with this last week. And so we've got a state rep, we've got a state senator, we have Representative Sean Rose, a junior representative from Howell County. And if you don't know where that is, it's where West Plains is.
We got some claps.
And it's the greatest place in the world.
I hear it's a little wet down there right now.
Yeah, we're getting dried up. You know, we had a lot of flooding and some businesses kind of destroyed. But, hey, community's pulling together and we're getting her cleaned up.
So. That's great. And we also have Senator Kayla Brownen, freshman senator from Boone County. From Columbia. And
we're how often do you come back on this side of the building, Senator? Do you try not to avoid it at all costs?
More often than I thought I would.
Than you prefer?
I still, you know, you got to ask House members if you want to get stuff done. So
yeah,
it's still part of the process.
That is very true. That's very true. And I just want to call Representative Rhodes out because he only does the podcast if he has, like, one of his bros with him. You won't come, you're too scared to come by yourself.
He was not a bro.
So I got a text message a little bit ago that said, hey, you want to do a podcast? And I said, sure. And then I find out it's got Caleb Brown.
No, we couldn't tell you who it was worse. With, otherwise
yeah.
you'd be
And
fine.
I'm like, ah, oh, Caleb's all right.
Caleb's a fine guy.
He's going to find a way to sue us for entrapment on this one.
Yeah. I had a text message to prove it.
Yeah, well, you guys are blowing up tour reform, so we'll be fine. I'm comfortable.
Oh!
Wow!
Too soon.
Yep, too soon.
Too fresh. Too emotions too are too soon. High.
Speaking of too soon, it is your last week of your first session in the Senate, Senator. And there's a lot of feelings towards your body. What are your impressions this year?
Well, you know, it's been an interesting year. I think, generally speaking, Senate's going to have to figure out a way to stop taking stuff so personal. You know, I think we've seen so many people take so many things personally, and then they're just kind of this culmination of chaos that has festered up at times. So I think it's gotten better, you know, the last couple of weeks, or maybe the last week. Some personalities who had been in conflict, you saw them working together on specific issues, the fix on HCB3 that the Senate said over that the House really doesn't like. But that was a good moment for us anyway. And, you know, I think there's been some other instances, got real ID done, and, you know, so... signs of hope, but it's been interesting. You know, I have to assume this is a good first year for me because I don't know that it can get any worse. Right? So there's
glass
nowhere to go.
Kind of guy
yeah, so,
you
I mean,
are.
That part of it is a good thing. So, and well, I've been trying to, you know, talk to senators and just have conversations that have nothing to do with, you know, what can you do for me or what can I do for you. But like I said, when I was on. The show a few weeks ago, build those relationships and that'll serve you well regardless of what you're doing. So,
Representative, what are your impressions of the Senate this year?
I mean, you know, you've got some new members and you've got some conflicting personalities. and obviously, like anything else, that takes a little time to work out and you've kind of got a little movement going on of bucking the system But I think, I'll be the one to say it. I was pretty dead certain that we were going to be locked down in the Senate the last week, and it's been anything but that. So I am.
There's still time.
Yeah.
Famous last words.
But I mean,
don't jinx it.
Do I think that they would have got done what they've gotten done this week? Absolutely not. I did not predict that. So. I'm a little bit impressed with them, and at the same time a little disgusted at the same time that we come the last week to work, and the rest of the time we've just had a little personality conflicts all year. So,
I think it's really funny, and Ben pointed this out to me, as Ben's been our champ in the Senate lately. There's been a few senators who have quoted the Watchmen and said, I'm not trapped in here with you, you're trapped in here with me. And I think that kind of reflects some lessons that some people are talking about with the new change in the building, which isn't just the conflict in the different bodies, but we also have a new governor. You can't really get, well, I guess you could, but this is probably the most Republican the state of Missouri has ever been. Mm-hmm. What lessons have either of you learned with this super-duper Republican building?
Well, I mean, for a lot of us, Sean and I both, we'd never served with a Republican governor. You know, there some of the guys that are in the Senate that served in the House were in the House when Governor Blunt was in office, but that's a new thing, you know, for a lot of us, and so that was obviously going to take some time. I mean, I think what you saw, what you have seen is, specifically in the Senate, you know, you see people, not everybody who's been a part of this kind of obstruction movement, they're not all mad about the same thing. In fact, they're all mad about, frankly, different things. But they find
they're mad.
They just find they find common ground, and that they're ticked off, and they want to find a way to communicate that. So, you know, I think if it gets back down to policy, that's what I, at the end of the day, you know, come back to issues, because that's what more times than not unites Republicans. And so if we are going to be united, if we're going to find ways to push things forward, you know, and it's been a good session. We got a lot of good stuff done. We're going to get some more good stuff done that the governor's probably going to sign. So if you can make it about issues, again, the personal, like every single time somebody kicks me in the teeth, I'm going to go and kill all their bills. If you take stuff that personal, you're going to be miserable, and everybody around you is going to be miserable. So,
do you think there's any truth to the idea that under a Democratic governor, you all sort of unified against a common enemy, so to speak?
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
Now that you have a Republican governor, everyone maybe got a little too excited. You lost
absolutely.
Sort of that unification against the Democratic governor, and the chaos is kind of what you see.
Well, I think the mission was when Nixon was governor was to be, anyway, anything we can do to override him or anything like that, we're on. Which, you know, he was the most overridden governor we've had, which is a little bit misleading in the past, because used to the only overrides up until Nixon came in office really was like two or three or ten, and obviously the 30 or so before that were marriages when you know, you had to go to the state to get a divorce, and then the governor, you know, would not grant it or whatever, and that was years and years and years ago. But anyways, so I think, and this has always kind of been my theory this year with a Republican governor, you know, we need to, as the Republican Party, police ourselves more now than ever, because there's more probably of a guarantee that what you pass will probably get signed into law. So we have to be very, very cautious and police ourselves more than we ever have to get stuff done and to make sure it's right when we do it. So, and that's kind of what I felt like I've been trying to do all year, is say in the rules chair, say, look, let's make sure it's right before we do it, because we know the governor's going to sign it, and we're, you know, it's going to be law, so let's not have to backtrack and go, oh, well, we made a mistake. So.
That's something we hear a lot whenever we're listening into the chambers, is, oh, this bill isn't perfect, but we've got to pass it. We'll fix it later. And I can't remember the last time I saw someone actually fix a bill that was passed.
Oh, we fix stuff all the time. No. You know, that's the thing. You get a lot of people that, I think it's a sense of urgency, though. But let's just get it across the building, and we keep it. I think we'll use as an example a bill that we both have together is the small cell deployment bill. And it's very complicated, very big bill. And it's a work in progress. And I think as of right now, we could bring it up in the Senate floor and perfect it on their side and be done. And it would be, it's a great bill. But it's been a constant work for 5 months,
longer,
6 months.
Longer than that, yeah.
You know, so, but that's, I mean, that's one of those things that I think the little time we're in, the more sense of urgency that we have.
Well, and especially some really heavy lifts with policy probably take more than 5 months to kind of work through the weeds. But because there is that May 12th middle of May end date, that's the end. That's when the buzzer, you know, that's when you look and see if you won or you lost. So it kind of creates this sense of, not competition, but a deadline, so to speak, as opposed to being like, okay, let's use the summer to really rehash that, make the best policy we can.
Well, and I think we have to realize that we've got majorities for a while. I mean, and we're going to have a Republican governor for at least 4 years. You don't get everything done in 1 year. You're not going to get everything done in 1 year. There's no real need to, you know, to the extent that if you can get it done and if it's right, then fine. But if there's things that need to be changed and tweaked and altered to get it to where it needs to be, live to fight another day, come back next year, do it right. I think that's patience is not rewarded here, and sometimes that's a problem.
And I also think too that maybe, and I'm not cutting down because I think, you know, he's kind of proven here that, you know, he's here to work with people and work for people. The governor's kind of had a little bit of that sense of urgency. We got to do all this, and we got to get all this, and it's like, you know what? We're okay. You know, let's make a better product if we take our time. And taking our time might take an extra year or whatever. You know, like, I don't know, a ticket bill.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. Or, you know, one of those things.
I didn't even think about that. Is this a joke on me? Well played.
Wait a minute, I just got
well played, guys.
Well played.
I will say, it seems like a lot of people right now, the conversation has turned to what is the future for the Senate? What's the future for the House? There's been a lot of talk about this session being historic as far as the quote-unquote infighting. So, Senator, what is the future for the Senate?
Well, I think one thing, I think it has been historic, but I think it's probably been historic because of what we've accomplished as well. I mean, you can't downplay the fact that we've become a right-to-work state. We've passed significant tort reforms. You know, education reform is moving faster and farther than it ever has. So, I mean, we are making really, really generational strides. So you can't downplay that. I think the future is enough senators coming together, having conversations, and saying, what do we want this thing to be? You know, is it going to be this replicated year over year, where nobody feels there's a lack of communication, you know, between these certain pockets of individual senators, and people feel like they're getting played or whatever else. Either we're going to keep doing that, or we're going to say, okay, you know, communication needs to happen. We need to be together on the things that we can be together. Be strategic about, you know, the things that we push first in an effort to try to bring folks together before we have some of these fights that we know are going to split up the caucus a little bit. I think there's a lot of people in our group that want to do that and think that that's possible. And so I think everyone on both sides of kind of this infighting on the Republican caucus has learned a lot this year. And it's just a matter of how we take the things that we've learned and apply them. So, but I think there's a lot of folks who, everybody's frustrated by this year. They're frustrated for different reasons, and they think that the outcomes or what we should do as a result sometimes are different. But at the end of the day, we know we can't keep doing this because I think the people of Missouri deserve better than us just continually beating each other up.
Well, I also think too that that having, I think the anticipation was to have a Republican Senate, Republican House, Republican Governor, we're going to do what we want. And, you know, it's
and not, everybody did, but not just on their own.
Yeah.
Yeah. That didn't happen.
What we wanted is different.
But Caleb's right, though. I mean, you look at what we've passed in the last 6 months, and this is historic year.
Yeah, it's a
I
big
mean,
deal.
And
it's easy to focus on what you didn't do as opposed to what you did do.
And we talked about this last night in the Speaker's office. I'm like, you know, tort reform and right to work and you know, maybe tonight prevailing wage, and you know, these are things that's been going on for years, and no one has ever been able to get it through. Or we get a veto, and then we get a 108 votes on it, you know, and that's not been needed this year. And I think that's what, when you talk about a fiscal impact or whatever, you know, a lot of those things are going to come back and help us, you know, in the next couple of years. So I'm excited about it. I think that's my message, is, you know, not so much the infighting, I think that's good to an extent. But
and that's what happens with the supermajority. Yeah, your range of your party is going to be very wide in their views.
Absolutely. But I think the message is very clear what we've been able to do, and I think we need to be proud of that.
Well, that's good, because the next thing I want to talk about is, what do you two think the five biggest accomplishments of this session were? Or three, because apparently there's some birds that have joined us as well, and it keeps distracting me, because I feel like I'm in the middle of a Snow White.
They're outside.
There's a bird?
They're outside.
Really? Every time you talk, they start chirping. Oh, it's very Disney-esque.
It's my voice.
Sean's got a pink tie on, so yeah. It all makes
sense. All right, hey, I've got nothing
to compliment. The birds fly, put it on, represent the birds.
Yeah, they
tied
it up.
Cinderella style.
I just stood in front of the mirror.
Cinderella style.
The three biggest accomplishments?
Five. But three's fine.
Right to work is probably one.
I'd say fully funding the formula.
That's huge. Yeah. That should have been number one. But you know what? At the same time, though, Caleb, we've always given more money to
education. Oh, yeah.
Every year, and it's always been a priority.
Yeah.
I think tour reform. That's another
huge. The number of tour reform bills and really what they represent as far as kind of solidifying the business environment in the state is, it's not quite as quote unquote sexy as right to work and some of the labor reforms that get attention, but that some of that stuff is hugely important.
And it's very high. It's like a high level of, you know, a lot of people don't understand it when you talk about venue and those kind of things. You really, people are, because the discussion on the floor, I mean, the attorneys are like, all right, here it is. Let's make it idealistic for you to understand it. Here it is. This is it. And once you read into it, look into it, and understand it, you're like, oh, I get it now. But people that don't ever live with that don't ever see it, and they go, well, I don't have it.
Unless you experience that, you really don't understand what practical terms.
Venue, right. Things like that.
So whenever you go back to your constituents and your districts, and you have to do an elevator speech on what tort reform is, what do you tell them?
I always say the point is, bring the pendulum to the middle. There is no question in my mind and in the minds of anyone who understands this that the litigation environment had gotten so skewed toward trial attorneys because of some court rulings that had happened. And so all I say is I want everybody to be able to have their day in court. I want everybody to be able to be made whole if something is done, you know, egregiously against them. But there is a price to pay when that pendulum swings far the other way, too far the other way. And so if you find the balance so that the consumer, the plaintiff, the individual who has been harmed can be made whole while not, you know, rewarding bad acting trial attorneys because they've found ways around the law, find that middle, and that benefits both sides. And so there's no good elevator speech because, you know, 85% of the people don't get it.
And the issue has so many arms. That's
there's
why there's
so
not
many
an
variables.
Omnibus tort reform bill,
that's right?
That's
right.
Why it's
right.
Broken up to 20 different...
Well, and that's part of the problem is you can't just immediately go, this is it, there it is. I mean, it's... And in who you're talking to, and people go, well, you mean I can't sue somebody? It's like, well, no. We're talking about these outlandish and things that take up, because you know you talk about venue and what venue is and how it affects St. Louis City specifically in St. Louis County is a whole issue in itself and will take an hour to explain and then go, and when people see it and they go, oh, you know what, that's probably right, because it has, it's became a hellhole for lawsuits and it's just got crazy.
I think Uber was a big deal.
Thank
Uber's
you
good.
For that. Thank you for that.
Uber's good. That's.
Well, I think in a bigger picture is regulatory reform.
Right.
There's a lot of different reforms that you've done beyond that bill, but that was probably the best
example. Since that started, though, you've got like Jeff City and Springfield. They're all like, hey, we're Uber, let's go, you know. And it's one of those, and I'll tell the story. I think I've told you this. I went to New Orleans, and my wife wanted to take the shuttle from the airport to the hotel. And she said, it's like $40 a person or whatever. And I go, well, that's stupid. Let's just Uber.
Who takes a shuttle?
That's what I told her.
Mrs. Rose does. So wash it.
No
wash
offense.
Your mouth.
No offense.
She's like, we're not going to do that. And I said, I got an Uber app. Boom, there we are. We're done. And she's like.
They have cell phones in West Plains?
It's good this is radio. The violence cannot be, you know.
So we've got Foundation Formula, Tort Reform, Rights Work, Uber / TNC, for our friends at Lyft.
we'll throw them something. That's
yes,
fine.
We should throw them.
I like the Dens folks.
Yeah, they're really nice.
They're nice.
I don't know.
Well, besides Brian Grace, right? Except him.
Jake I keep getting him confused with the Attorney General now.
Oh, don't flatter.
They're nice.
I love that.
They've never been the same.
Love that.
Oh, my word.
So the fifth biggest accomplishment of the session. And granted, there's like 2.5 days left. You could like pass real ID.
I was going to say, real ID. I know that's kind of contentious. There was no scenario, one, you know, we sidestepped a special session last night, I think was incredibly important. The reality that we would stand in the way and put, you know, 6 million Missourians completely in this box of inconvenience is insane. So I think that was a big deal. Probably one of the biggest, if you talk about the impact on everyday Missourians, getting that done and finding a way home. And kudos to Ryan Selby, kudos to Will Krause, you know, for working really hard and trying to find a way home.
You know, and Kim's right. You know, I had a guy call me when we first perfected on the House floor. He goes, look, I've got a company that I put in, like, camera systems and things like that. We were going to go to a military base to do it. And he goes, they turned my guys away in Tennessee. They had to come home, apply for a passport, $160. It's four guys. And then another 300 a piece to get a 48-hour turnaround. He goes, what is this real ID stuff? I don't have a clue. And I'm like, well, we're working. And that's the ice machine. Sorry, I had to bring it up.
For all of your sodas.
Yeah. So, the water cooler honestly doesn't work about half the time. And that's the best part. Anyways, so...
you guys are really roughing it over here.
I know. So, but that's the whole thing is that if we did not get Real ID out, that was your first special session.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think we owe it to the people of Missouri, if they're going to travel or be able to travel or go, we shouldn't have to buy a $160 passport. If you got that option, get the options.
Now, I will say, whenever we do a capital improvements podcast this summer, we will be doing it from Representative Rhodes' office, between the birds and all that jazz.
It feels like home.
Is this what your home is like?
It feels cozy.
I live in the woods. I live in the woods, if that helps. So.
Well, speaking of the people of Missouri, something my boss always likes to ask is, what are your constituents concerned about? Like we heard about, you got the one with the real ID.
Are you talking right now or just in general? Because right now we're talking FEMA cleanup. But other than that, you know, my constituents were really worried about right to work, economic development, having the environment to bring jobs to Missouri.
Howell County's right on the Arkansas border, right?
Correct. We're in the middle, but we're 2 hours from Springfield and 2 hours from Pauper Bluff. So we're
in
that
middle. Why do you live there again?
Why do I live there
again? Do you guys have a Walmart?
Oh, you don't even know.
Hey, man, that joint we ate dinner at downtown West Plains.
That's good.
I like that place.
See, there you go.
Well, the senator has
Cafe 37.
Three Walmarts in his.
Yeah, we don't have a big Walmart fan.
We got like a lot of Walmarts, a lot of Hy-Vees.
Hey, Walmart.
Yeah, love me some Hy-Vee.
Employs a lot Hy-Vee of people in our area, so you know we go. But you're right; it's a 12,000 person town. We want to create jobs. Manufacturing jobs is big. You know, last year I secured $300,000 in the state budget to go towards an advanced manufacturing training facility that will train people for jobs that just opened the other day.
And hashtag humble brag.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And it flooded. But
no,
life's good.
Back.
We didn't lose any equipment. I went through there Monday before I came up, and they were like, we're okay, a little sheetrock, but everything's good. I'm like, all right. So they've got students enrolled. It's a big deal, and we're happy about it.
So what are Boone Countyans concerned about this week?
Well, as Senator Ryan's constituent, let me tell you.
Yeah.
You have all the lobbyists.
I got a lot of lobbyist constituents who have a lot of concerns, needless to say. University of Missouri, making sure that they get treated the best that they can. I think transportation funding continues to be A1 on most people's list. They don't know how to fix it, and I don't think the problem is most folks don't know the variables of like the parameters that we are living under here, that we can't fix this problem ourselves. Eventually, someday, the people of Missouri are going to have to vote for something that fixes the problem. I don't think they're ready to do that now. And so it has to be an ongoing engagement with them to say, hey, you know, this is the world we live in, and you guys are going to have to get serious about finding a solution. We'll keep giving you options. We're going to throw a gas tax increase at you, or a toll road at you, or, you know, name whatever the solution is. But at some point, people in Missouri are going to have to sign on the dotted line, and that could take a while. But that's a big deal.
And my last serious question, and it's something I think about a lot, is if the lawmakers had a hat that they had to pass around to all the taxpayers to collect to pay the fiscal note of any bill that you all talk about, can you think of any bills that are currently up for discussion and could pass if y'all really wanted to, that the taxpayers probably wouldn't go for?
I don't know if it's in a bill or not, but I think they've been very, very clear about raising taxes in Missouri. You know? Mm-hmm. There was a ballot issue, and not wanting that. And that really sets precedence. That was election year, probably your last House election year, right?
14.
And mm-hmm. I was sitting at home with my laptop on and refreshing the Secretary of State's website.
Just to make sure I won.
No, I really don't care about that.
I can say that's a real bro thing.
I care less about that. But what I was noticing was, obviously, St. Louis and Kansas City are your last reporting places. And I was like, this thing's already failing. Chances are it's going to pass. And I waited till like 2 in the morning, and it failed miserably. And I thought, wow. You know, and we can thank Dave Henson for that. Franklin County.
Shout out, Representative Henson, wherever you are.
Yeah.
I think there's, you know, people, there is a price that comes with a somewhat disengaged citizenry, you know. I mean, you see that, the universal trend of low election turnout and people making decisions on who they vote for and what initiatives they vote for 2 or 3 days before an election. It's the reason why if you've got money to spend in pushing a message that late in the game, that you can sway a lot of people.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, that at the end of the day, I've heard it from both sides of the aisle. You get the government that you deserve, and there is a very harsh, jagged edge truth to that. In that, you know, the only way that people get what they want is by being engaged. If you throw your hands up and say I can't fix the problem, then you won't. That is the only way. Absolutely assured that you won't have a hand in fixing, you know, fixing the things that you think are problems. So that's a problem that I think is ongoing, that doesn't get as partisanship becomes more gets further apart, you see more people becoming disengaged for that reason, and that's a big problem.
But I also think, though, after this year's election, the fall election, you know, I was standing around watching at different polling locations and
to make sure I won.
See, I was back in Howe County. Yeah, unfortunately it wasn't Boone County, I was in Howe County. But there were more people that walked in the door never voted before
in
their
lives. That's true.
Ever. And didn't know how to fill out or do whatever. And I think, though, I personally think they voted for Trump and their guy won and now they're engaged. You know, and they want to be engaged. I don't know what the sigh was for, if it was like
I honestly, it's because I read the news this morning, and as a state editor, I try really hard to not really look at the national issues, and my favorite article this morning is from the Washington Post about Sean Spicer, the president's press secretary, hiding behind hedges to stay away from reporters, and I want that to happen to me. I want to be so scary that I run someone behind a hedge, and so that's currently what's in my mind every time I think of.
That's pretty powerful.
We can arrange that somehow.
I mean, we'll make better about yourself.
The senator and I, every time we run into in the hallway and see each other, we both just take off
that's
the
right.
opposite direction.
That's right.
I'm better that way.
See, that's respect.
That's true.
Okay.
Just a healthy fear.
Speaking of amusing things, we have 5 questions.
Okay.
Oh, Lord.
First question. And I kind of know the answer to for the representative. Do you have a nickname? And if so, what is it and why?
Do I have to be truthful?
I guess you could lie.
So,
you want to lie to a reporter?
When I was a police officer, we were working late nights, and a gentleman by the name of Robbie Kreitz, who became the sheriff of Howe County, it was like 2 in the morning. You got to understand, this was like in 99, 2000, Sean Puffy Combs was a big singer at the time, and his song came on or something, and we were, I don't remember what we did, we were outside, and the song came on, and he was like, "It's Sean Puffy Combs," and he was like, "Sean Puffy wrote." So here's my thought on that. I mean, you could have a nickname like, you know, Stinky or, you know, whatever, and I will take that nickname over something like that any day.
So we're rolling with Stinky Roads after today.
Yeah.
Is that what I'm hearing?
Honestly, it's one of those things that really stuck. And during my law enforcement career, you know, they would, every once in a while, you're not supposed to use names on the radio when you get on the police radio. And somebody would be like, "Hey, you go find," my badge number is 542, and they would never say. One guy would go, "If you're going to find Puffy," and I'm like, "Dude, come on," you know? So, I mean, it didn't happen that much, but I'm okay with that. I know what Caleb's is.
So it's not so much A.
Do you know what mine is?
Yeah.
I don't even know what mine is.
What, is it one that behind his back?
Yeah it wouldn't be correct, but it would just be A.
I don't know what mine is. I think my baseball team in high school called me Chief Wiggins. The dude from The Simpsons. I never watched The Simpsons.
Yeah.
I think he was like I think he ate donuts a lot.
Oh yeah, he did.
I was a little heavier when I was in high school, so.
So it was more like a traumatic nickname.
I didn't really know like what the reference was. So,
oh, got it.
Yeah, I didn't watch The Simpsons.
Didn't know to be offended.
Yeah.
It's alright.
I'm offended a lot. But.
Next question, and it's kind of shameless, but what would you do if you won the Missouri lottery?
How much?
Yeah, what are you?
How much is it right now, guys? Do we know?
I mean, if it's $2 million, you got a different.
$100 million?
I don't change what I do.
What's that? Say $10 million.
I don't necessarily change what I do.
I don't either.
But if it's $50 million, I've kind of changed what I'm
doing. Yeah.
It is currently $2.3 million. Though.
Yeah,
that's nothing. That's not. Yeah.
I'm hanging
out.
Put
that in a savings account. Keep living your life.
I mean, you can redo your kitchen. So,
that's what I'm saying. You buy a house.
My kids go to college.
Buy a
and
house,
you only get half of it, right? You only get 1 point.
Yeah. Not even
that. You make an annuity.
Yeah.
I would just continue living.
Okay, well, that's a good life then.
I probably would too. Yeah. I mean, if it was like, yeah, if I'm hitting the.
Yeah, if it's 400
million. Yeah,
if
it's the all time Powerball.
See you suckers later.
Hey, I'll save some pictures.
I'm playing a lot of golf either way.
Oh, yeah.
I see me as a future presidential candidate.
Yeah, where are we playing golf? No, I wouldn't waste some money on that.
Yeah, that's
true. Where are we playing golf at? I don't know. Let's fly here.
That's right.
You own a golf course at that point.
That's true. I would call my friends. I'd be like, get on the plane. We're going to go play golf here today. We'll come back tonight.
Works for me.
Yeah.
All right. What is your favorite fast food chain? Because in case you missed it, lawnmakers have a very unique schedule and travel plans and all that jazz.
Probably Chick-fil-A.
You know, I
like Chick-fil-A. I like, was it Freddy's?
Oh, yeah.
Freddy's?
Yeah.
Fire.
Yeah.
They got some nice desserts.
I drive down the road, but,
I can't eat any of these things anymore, but.
No, yeah. Caleb's all healthy. It's great.
You know, I'm actually kind of curious, because Becky, you drive around more than I do now. What's your favorite?
Taco Bell.
Oh, yeah. That
was we saw the tweet Taco last night.
My kids are like,
Taco
Bell.
I can drop like $30. Easy at Taco Bell.
That's it?
But that's a good thing about
that's
Taco
like,
Bell.
That's like buying
if you buy $30
menu,
at Taco Bell.
Yeah, because I like a bite of everything. That's the thing. I want a little chicken quesadilla, a little bean burrito, crunchy tacos.
Do you dogs? Because that's what I have to do.
No, I can.
You really want to clean up after you go to the dogs?
Appetite. I'm a growing girl.
So my kids, literally, I'll eat two or three different things from Taco Bell. That's it. My son's 17. It's like, okay, I want two of these, some of that, this.
And I'm
like,
and I have that
is that for everybody? And he's like, no, that's just me. And I'm like, you know what? You're a teenager.
I developed a new habit while I was pregnant of not just ordering a smorgasbord at one restaurant, but going to different restaurants, different fast food chains. I would get a milkshake from, like, Culver's, and then I'd go get a burger from Burger King across the way, and I'd go to Taco Bell and get a burrito. That's why my husband is husband of the year.
Yeah.
I respect that.
I think it was the same when my wife was pregnant. She was sick the first 3 months, so I was like, I'm going
to I'd do the same thing if I was pregnant.
And then it was like, all right, where do you want to go? You're hungry? Let's go.
Let's go.
And we did a lot of that. A lot of just, let's eat and go to Walmart and get some stuff for later.
Yes. Fourth question. What is your biggest pet peeve?
Oh.
Disrespectful people. Out of the blue, disrespectful people. Don't know you from Adam.
Are you referencing anything
recently? No. I mean,
you have a parking lot?
No. It's just people that don't know you or don't know, and it just automatically are just disrespectful because they have this
idea. You need more embroidered polos so people know who you are.
John Rhodes, do you know who I am?
Yeah. Do you pop the collar on those?
That's why I wear a ball cap when I'm not here.
I don't know. Arrogance, maybe. I don't like arrogant people.
Interesting workplace.
It's a really tough thing to be working in the Missouri Senate.
Disrespect and arrogance.
Yeah. Now, the fifth question used to always be, who is your favorite legislator colleague? And that's kind of a backfire on us lately, so we're changing it. What is the worst bill you have ever voted on?
Oh, wow. No. Or a bill that you would change your vote. You wish you could change your vote on it.
Can they say that on the record?
We're recording.
The worst bill that I would say, no, I wouldn't vote for that.
Because it could be a bill that you voted no on. I know you voted no on bills.
Yeah, we get put in, even this year, like the conundrum of, do we vote for circuit breaker or do we kick people out of nursing homes?
Yeah, exactly.
You end up getting faced with complete lose-lose scenarios, and that happens.
I like the "What song would you come out to?"
Very freaking intro.
Oh yeah, they have music. You've been thinking about it. Yeah.
What's your walk-up song?
Stranglehold.
What is your walk-up music?
Stranglehold.
That's a good one. That's a good one. I would say like Led Zeppelin, like The Ocean, like something just hard rock and roll.
I'm kind of embarrassed to admit this, but I am a regular WWE watcher.
Oh, yeah.
She should be.
Yeah. At one point in time, my husband cut me off, and now my baby's really into it, which is great, because I'm really sick of Mickey Mouse. Have you seen the new Japanese WWE superstar? He's got a violin intro.
Oh, what? Violin?
Violins. Like, whenever he was on WrestleMania, they had, like, six violinists.
Oh, like live?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
It was amazing.
Okay. Production value.
I dig that. I love
that. That's kind of like, though, the dude from the Cardinals, Rosenthal or whatever. His entry music is like violin stuff.
Good for him.
It's pretty cool.
And so, centered around yours is probably one of your own songs.
Absolutely. You see how I led into that?
Yes. BTS knocked it out of the park.
I have no comment.
Oh. Is that?
No. I don't know. My walk in.
We need to play some of it.
We should.
Somebody asked me that on another radio. I think it was after my little encounter with Shop on the Center Shop on the
little encounter.
Sure.
And I said either YouTube Beautiful Day or Muse Hysteria. YouTube Beautiful Day being completely a joke, you know, but then Muse Hysteria probably being a little more in line with where we were at that point in the Senate. But maybe it is YouTube Beautiful Day now. I feel like the world
is...
That is the softest walkout music I think I've ever heard.
How would you take... I don't know how you take that. I mean, guys coming out to make an impression of, hey, this dude is for real. Legit.
It's a beautiful day.
I like you too.
Do you come out skipping to that, or how do you?
My son's middle name is named after a British band. It's like we love British.
Keane.
The band Keane.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
His middle name is Keane.
On your cuff, it's CFR. What's your middle name?
Forby. It's my mom's maiden name.
Really? It's interesting.
That's a nice tradition.
Senator, I'm gonna go ahead and give you a walk-up song.
What is it?
Rock You Like a Hurricane.
Okay.
That way you get to walk up and still.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it.
There you go.
We've got two legislators with interesting walkout music, and I'm so glad that they're lawmakers and not MMA fighters or WWE superstars.
Me too.
Yep. Of course, I would like to thank our sponsors again. We've got Republic Services and St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce bringing you this lovely podcast with all of our lovely guests we've had this session. Obviously, this podcast will continue after session. But hopefully it will be a little bit less contentious and more deeper into the issues. Of course, this has been Ben. This has been Ben. This has been Becky, Ben, and Rachel with Representative Sean Rhodes and Senator Caleb Rowden. And I look forward to talking to you again next week.